This is Junk Food Cinema.
Tell Amberoo to put out the blue milk. It's time for Junk Food Night in America. Paint my taint with Cheeto dust and call me an Oompa Loompa. It's JCV December, and this podcast is moving into sudden death. That is every bit as fun as the color commentary from the actual hockey commentators in the movie Sudden Death. But that's not what this is. This is actually Junk Food Cinema. Hello. Any time, Cargill.
Hi. Well, you did... You always have this whole thing, and you go into a shtick, and then you go, and here is my co-host, blah, 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 blah.
Hi, here, it's Cargill.
And in the center square, Mr. Paul Lind.
I think in this, always square, never straight.
Yeah, so, yeah, we're talking sudden death tonight.
It took us.
We're apparently off book tonight as
10
well.
10 seconds into our JCV December kickoff.
My name is Jean-Claude, and I will dance for you.
We're talking about Paul Lind because we're real men, and that is what real men do.
We're men in tights, tight tights.
This is very true. If you would like to hear more of the manly menness of this podcast, you can always check out our back catalog on iTunes as well as on Blog Talk Radio, and you can follow us on Twitter at Junk Food Cinema and like the podcast on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. And of course, if you want to contribute some, if I may kind of relate to this movie, some cold hard cash, you can always financially support the show, patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. That's all the housekeeping, except for the fact
that I'm C. Robert Cargill, he's Brian Salisbury, us once again,
it's Yamamir Yager, everybody, straight from the Pittsburgh Penguins. Yamamir, how are you?
I am good.
I imagine that is how someone with two J's, neither of which sound like fucking J's in their name, would sound.
For those of you that heard our Roadhouse episode last year, of course, once again, my good buddy Derek Marr is back in town.
Yay, I'm back.
Welcome.
He was my plus one at tonight's 35mm screening.
Oh, how beautiful did that print look?
That print was so beautiful, you'd almost believe that no one went to see it in theaters and it was yanked almost immediately afterwards.
I feel like that would be foolish and also accurate to assume.
I did see that in a theater in 1995 and have not seen it since.
You may have been the person who saw the only time that print ran ever.
They clearly kept this in a vault next to like Walt Disney's frozen head. Like this vault was so hard to find that this is the first time the Draft House has ever shown it on 35.
True story.
And it was pristine.
Not a mark on it.
Not one.
Now that you've said that, though, I really hope the sequel to Disney's Frozen is Disney's Frozen Head, where it's just like the two princesses actually find the vault and they're looking for Disney's actual Frozen Head.
I'm terrified at this point to find out that someone's going to listen to the podcast and go, oh, hey, by the way, the print didn't come in, so we just showed a DCP, and that's why it looks so pretty.
Oh my God, I will be so mad.
You'd be so heartbroken.
I would be so mad.
That was the whole reason you chose this over Lionheart.
No, there were a couple reasons I chose it over Lionheart. One being, they have totally shown Lionheart multiple times in 35. They've totally shown Bloodsport multiple times in 35. But this movie, Sudden Death.
911 Emergency Services.
I'm calling you from the Civic Arena.
The vice president is being held hostage in the owner's box. And they've got my daughter, too.
What is your objective?
$1,700,000,000.
We're still evaluating the situation.
They want money. A lot of it. Give it to them.
Do not try any kind of rescue. Do you understand me?
If you're not going to pay, say so. I'll get my daughter.
When the game ends, everyone in this box and in this arena will die by explosion, fire, and panic.
Tonight, 17,000 hockey fans have been taken hostage.
Enough bombs have been planted in this building to stop all the clocks in the hemisphere.
But only one of them knows it.
I'm going to try to stop you.
I know where the bombs are, so I know where you're going.
Then come and get me.
We are going to do this by the numbers.
What number was that?
Now he has more to lose than anyone. Jean-Claude Van Damme. Powers boost. Death.
Which is one that we're back-to-back episodes in which we are talking about movies that we kind of talked about, but not really, because we talked about Flash Gordon last week, which we had
done sort of a alternate future type episode of What If George Lucas had directed it. And we talked about Sudden Death in that same sort of long, long ago period in an episode called Die Hardlies, where we broke down all of our favorite Die Hard knockoffs. This one is high, high on the list of one of my absolute favorite Die Hard ripoffs, which sounds like faint praise, except that there are a fuck ton of Die Hard ripoffs out
there. There are a lot of Die Hard ripoffs.
I mean, more than you could possibly sneeze at, and that's with pollen being remarkably high.
In fact, this is such a Die Hard ripoff. I honestly, I shit you not, this is not a setup for a joke. For years, I've been getting this confused with knockoff. I actually, like, I was like, when we were watching this, I'm like, wait, where's
That's
Rob
true.
Schneider?
That's true.
No shit, Rob Schneider's in the other one. That one's called Knockoff. I always thought this was Knockoff because it was a knockoff.
See, what's funny is, I remember one time in an episode, you said, we're not watching your favorite Van Damme movie, Knockoff. And I was like, why the fuck would that be my favorite Van Damme? And now I realize you were supplanting the two.
Okay. I, for some reason, keep thinking Knockoff is the hockey one, and Sudden Death was just another stupid name for a Van Damme movie.
No, Knockoff is not the hockey ripoff of Die Hard. That's Sudden Death. It's also Face Off is also not the Van Damme movie about hockey. That is a different action movie that has nothing to do with hockey.
Unfortunately.
So, yeah, right? That's the one thing that could have made that movie
better. And
that's
a John Woo movie that doesn't have Van Damme.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
But Hard Target is a John Woo movie. See, you're going to get your eyes crossed the more we do this.
There's a lot of things that Jean-Claude Van Damme did, and a couple of them are good.
Yeah.
And that's what JCV December is mostly about.
You are Van Damme right, my friend.
But first, we're starting with Sudden Death, because we'll get into the better movies later.
Oh, come now. Sudden Death. Okay, let's jump in the Wayback Machine for just a moment here. It's 1995, the glorious year of 1995.
When I met my wife. It was a glorious year.
It was a very good year. So in 95, Van Damme had just come off of Time Cop, which was one of his absolute biggest hits ever, 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 ever. And so he immediately teams up with that director, Peter Hyams, who is a director who we have talked about, a director we will likely talk about more in the future.
Which Hyams movie did we do?
Running Scared.
We did do Running Scared.
Oh, Running Scared.
Running Scared is great. I also really like 2010. He did Time Cop, as I mentioned.
I have a mad love, as I mentioned at the screening, for Outland, which
Outland,
if there was ever a movie we should have covered already, Outland is on that short list. It's a remake of High Noon in Space with Sean Connery.
All of those things that you just said should be the reason people run out right now to see that movie. Star Chamber, I think, is really good. He did a great buddy cop movie in 1974 called Bustin' with Elliot Gould and Robert Blake. This is a guy we'll definitely be talking about more.
Excellent.
He also did one of the more forgettable Three Musketeer movies with The Musketeer.
And he did End of Days.
He did End of Days and The Relic. I actually really dig The Relic. So Sudden Death is basically him reteaming with Peter Hyams to do a Die Hard ripoff. And when I say reteaming, Peter Hyams did not want to do this movie. He thought the script was weak. And then when they enlisted Van Damme was like, no, you have to do it because if this and this other reason. And it turns out the script was still as weak, but now it had Van Damme. And Hyams liked Van Damme's take on the character, which his take on the character is a JCVD with PTSD for the FD.
Yes.
Yes.
And that is the entire depth of his character in this movie.
Yes. Yeah. His character is I'm not quite John McClane. Or I'm John McClane with a Belgian accent.
So let's get this out of the way right now. This movie has one big, huge, gaping flaw in it. And that is that Jean-Claude Van Damme may be at his most black hole-ish of charisma in this movie as he is in any film. Like, this is one of those rare Jean-Claude Van Damme movies where he is given nothing to work with and doesn't bring anything on his own.
See, that's interesting. I think where you and I delineate on Jean-Claude Van Damme is you say that as if there are movies where he has a lot of charisma. And for me, I've never seen him have charisma in a movie.
We'll get into this in several of the other films. Jean-Claude Van Damme, when he is playing a dolt, when he is playing a guy who knows he's not the smartest guy in the room, or when he's a guy who is a very well-intentioned idiot, he's insanely likable because he can turn on the charm and be very sweet. But the minute he has to play someone confident, his idea of playing someone confident is being stoic. And in being stoic, he tightens up his face and every line is delivered with the same staccato.
Who can turn the world on with the splits? It's apparently Van Damme.
Because we'll get into, when we get into Lionheart, I think he's really likable in Lionheart. So much so that there's a certain moment in the movie when we discuss that movie that the audience, no matter who they are, no matter how much they might hate Jean-Claude Van Damme, is fucking into that. And he can do that. And he's likable. I think he's likable in Bloodsport. But typically, Van Damme is very likable when you give him a friend and then you murder that friend or put him in a coma. Right. And then he has to beat someone's ass for his friend.
They do that for juxtaposition where it's like, here's the character who actually has charisma. And here also is Van Damme. The moment in Bloodsport where he shows the most charisma is a fucking Mentos commercial in the middle of the goddamn, where he makes Forrest Whitaker fall into the fucking bay in Kowloon or wherever the fuck they're shooting that. So yeah, no, but for me, I don't care. Like, Jean-Claude Van Damme movies for me are not about the charisma of JCVD, because that is a sentence that sounds ridiculous coming out of my mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like
spiders.
Why? Like spiders. If my mouth were filled with spiders, it would be slightly more comfortable than saying Jean-Claude Van Damme and charisma in the same sentence.
That joke will make sense to you guys in a little bit.
Yes. Yes, it absolutely will. But let's get down to the nitty gritty here. The one thing that can always save a bad movie for us, and we've seen it time and time again, the one thing that can save a really bad movie is a great villain. And I feel like if Sudden Death has anything, it has a great villain in the late, great Powers Booth.
I agree there. It's a very weird performance by Powers Booth. Powers Booth is, again, here is an issue with this movie, but it's also what I think works in its favor. Is that usually Powers Booth is the kind of villain that you like even when you hate him. Like, as we talked about before, he's given quite possibly one of the greatest deliveries of two words ever. Two words, two syllables, well, bye. you were right, because it's like that delivery is so good. And he is so, you want to like him and you want to hate him at the same time. And here, he's just fucking mean.
Please, he needs a doctor.
Rodney Moore, go ahead. Dead heroes get the best funerals.
No, he's much more Jim Jones, because that's where my Powers Booth is. I always look at, every time I see him in anything, I think, oh, he's going to give people Kool-Aid soon.
he's...
Kool-Aid, not this week's junk food pairing.
But, here he's doing his Hans Gruber. If Hans Gruber really delighted in watching people suffer, there's a moment where somebody just... where the little girl falls down and hurts herself, and he just goes,
he
just cackles at people's suffering. Like, it's not even in a true sociopathic manner. It's not like he's the Joker or anything.
It's the only way the MacGuffin of the movie works.
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
otherwise, why would you kidnap people to get the bank to let go of frozen accounts?
Yeah. What is his plan exactly?
And they then get routed around.
No,
his plan is to lose money.
I'm gonna kidnap the vice president and force the government to let go of these frozen accounts that have billions in them.
And then
they're gonna get jumped around all these different banks, and in the process, we're gonna shave off $500 million.
Yeah. I will say that is actually one of the most coherent parts of this movie, is that ultimately, this villain is a guy who works in the Treasury Department in the counterfeit division. And so he understands how money is funneled around, and he knows where all these frozen accounts are. And he's literally having these accounts unfrozen and sent to other accounts that are going to bounce around. And while it's bouncing around, they're splitting up the money. So eventually the government will be able to shut down this money again. But he's going to have stolen $500 million.
The only place that falls apart for me is where and we're going to get that done by kidnapping the vice president and just saying, do it or we will kill him, which we were going to do anyway.
Yeah, but here's my thing, and I get what you're saying, except that it's kind of hard to buy into the success of a plan where you ask for $1.7 billion and then you are resigning yourself to only taking $500 million of that. So percentage-wise, it still kind of looks like a failed plan even when it succeeds. I have a hard time believing that in that boardroom where all of his henchmen and ne'er-do-wells, like, that he scraped off the other Pacific Courier truck that didn't make it to Nakatomi, we're just all fine with this. Where it's like, I'm sorry, we're asking for how much, but we're keeping how? Okay.
Well, I don't know.
Periods in the game, 1.5 or 500 million per period, plus 200 million for the sudden death overtime.
Oh.
He's just going to keep one period.
it's not a good rate of return on the investment is all I'm trying to say. But let's kind of go through this from the top. I mean, we're introduced to Jean-Claude Van Damme's character, who has, I believe he has another one of those like super American sounding names, Darren McCord, who they do, I will, to this movie's credit, because Van Damme movies and Schwarzenegger movies can go one of two ways. They can either completely ignore the accent and just pretend he's American, which both of those actors have been in movies like that, or they can find a way to throw away a line that explains it. And in this movie, they do have a line where it's like, oh, I used to play a little bit in Canada. I used to play hockey a little bit in Canada. It's like, oh, he's French-Canadian. That at least makes a little bit of sense. But in the movie, he's a fireman. We see him at the beginning of the film trying to save a little girl in the middle of a fire. He's somehow trapped with her. There are firemen running in and out of this very small building, like at the beginning, just running in and out, and yet somehow he's still trapped. And like, can someone please, no, seriously, I'm in here. Guys, can anyone get in here, please? Hello, anyone at all? And it still takes them a good 5 minutes
until
to get to him.
Until a wall of what appears to be just nothing but pure fire falls on them. Then all of them come
in. And he smothers a small child to death. And that's
where the PTSD comes
in. And this is where the element that's supposed to make us care about him. They try very hard in the first 10 minutes of this movie to make us give a shit about this Van Damme. Because if this doesn't work, you're not going to be with him the rest of the movie because he's really not interesting.
No, Peter, because I saw this movie. It was called Backdraft. And I feel like when you play a fireman, everyone will love you no matter what. And it's like, yes. Ish. There's ellipsis at the end of that. But as a result, he's becomes a fire marshal for the Pittsburgh Penguins? Question mark? Is that his entire job all year long?
Is there just a dedicated
in-house
fire marshal for Mellon Arena?
I don't know. That's what I really want to know. And this does take place, again, to its credit, at Mellon Arena in Pittsburgh. So you see actual, I'm sure it's not all there, but you do see actual shots of like him scaling the dome and shots from inside the arena. So, I mean, that part I thought was really great as someone who likes both Van Damme movies and actual sports. Now, I will admit that in 1995, when I saw this movie for the first time, it was revelatory because I didn't know hockey was a sport until this movie really kind of...
Were you four?
No, I'm kidding. I knew it was a sport, but I never cared about it until I saw this movie. And I'm like, oh, okay, this is kind of a cool setting for a diehard movie. However... The important thing to remember about Sudden Death is that it began life as a comedy. It was a action parody film.
Yeah, it was satirizing not only Die Hard, but a series of all the other movies that had come out that had knocked off Die Hard. Because there were a lot of them immediately after. Like, I mean, one of my favorites, as I talked about previously, was Toy Soldiers, which was Die Hard with teen kids and Will Wheaton.
Die Hard with Wheaton. Not very tough sounding.
That's no.
Isn't Sean Astin in that?
Yeah,
as well?
I believe that. Yeah, I believe that's Astin that's in that. And it's Bob. Yeah, and so there were a lot of them. So they decided to make a satire, a comedy out of this Die Hard movie. And apparently the comedy wasn't very funny. And then they brought on Jean-Claude Van Damme and said, "Well, let's just make a Die Hard knockoff then," and they kept all the elements that really ripped off Die Hard, so there's like beat for beat moments where you're like, oh, here's where he gets the walkie talkie so he can talk to the villain the whole movie, and you know, you hit all of these beats and all of these moments that you've seen in Die Hard, right down to let's have a fight on the roof and tie a cable around and jump around. Why are we on the roof? No explanation for why he scales the roof whatsoever.
Yeah, and the biggest problem with that, obviously, and it's a weird thing throughout this whole movie, I don't know if you guys noticed, so many setups for one-liners after kills, not a single one.
Nope.
Not a single opportunity is taken to make those one-liners. I was supremely disappointed with that for sure. But one of the interesting things about this is I have a theory that this movie was a parody until Van Damme got the role. When Schwarzenegger, Stallone, and Bruce Willis himself all passed on this, and it fell to Van Damme, I feel like somebody panicked and said, we got the least comedic person in that bunch. What do we do? Let's change this so no one knows it was ever a comedy, which is fine, except for one problem. And that problem is they left a certain scene in the movie that I love to pieces, but is absolutely fucking absurd and is played so straight face that you can't help but howl with laughter.
I swear to God, this scene is why you showed this movie.
I fucking, when Jean-Claude Van Damme fights a penguin mascot, a woman in a giant foam penguin suit.
That is Icy.
Icy. Also not the junk food pairing. Icy's are also not the junk food pairing of this episode. But yeah, no, you're right. I remember that scene as a kid, and I remember not making it all the way through this movie as a kid, because the other thing that's interesting about changing this from a comedy into a straight action film is that someone, I feel like someone was worried that the remnants of comedy would be felt. So as an overcorrection, they were like, let's make this the most brutal Die Hard knockoff of any of the Die Hard knockoffs.
Well, I think that is actually, some of those are part of the remnants. Like, I feel like in particular, the kill with the chicken bone is a perfect example of somebody trying to be funny of, hey, in these movies, they always grab what's available. Well, there's a chicken bone. So he breaks the chicken bone and stabs a guy in the neck with it.
And I felt like it was the same thing with the stealing of the security vehicle, where the guy literally just says, here, jump in the back of your thing. We'll lock you in and we won't kill you. And then they jump in the back of the van and immediately just kill them.
Okay, fine. But I was more referring to things like, do we all agree the mayor's wife has been the most annoying? And then we watch like the slow, like torturous moment before he kills her. We watch the mayor mourn her. We watch this old woman get murdered for zero reason whatsoever. Like, there is so much collateral innocent victim. Like, innocent people get murdered in droves in this
You know what? I disagree with the old woman. She's an old woman in the 90s. And this guy clearly asked for cookies, and all she had to offer was Fig fucking Newton.
I swear to God, thought you were saying
free Fig Newtons.
Oh, that's bullshit. I thought you were going to say you disagreed that she got killed. And I'm like, did we watch the same movie? Because she's definitely straight up murder town.
I don't think we watched the same movie, because you're really excited about this.
I don't understand how you can't love this movie.
And there is a complete disregard for anyone once they've been killed by a bad guy.
Yeah.
The equipment manager for the Penguins comes out and is like, hey, what are you guys doing in here? 50
That scene was the one time I went, Van Damme might not be a hero, as
Van
it turns
Damme's
out.
And Van Damme's just like, I'll kick this guy and then just ignore it.
Van Damme runs in first, and Van Damme like crouches into a corner waiting for the guy to come in so he can get the drop on him. The equipment manager comes up to Van Damme, hey, what's going on? Any hero would say to this guy, hey, go hide, someone's coming in with a gun. Van Damme doesn't say word goddamn one, French or English, to this equipment manager, who then gets blown away, and Van Damme proceeds to get the drop on
him. And then Van Damme, who's wearing hockey skates at the time, doesn't kick the bad guy in the neck.
Okay, that's the other thing that's interesting. That actually happened in the NHL, yeah, where someone accidentally got their throat cut by a skate. And it was gory as fuck and terrifying. But for some reason in this film, where people are getting killed with all kinds of implements.
That happened in the NHL before 1995. I could be wrong on that.
Yeah, no, I think you might be right.
But it happened previous to this.
That
should have happened in this movie.
Here is a small flaw that I found with the film, which is what you're talking about. This movie has a number of moments where you're like, oh, they're about to... Oh, wait, no, they totally didn't. Like, Jean-Claude Van Damme smacks a guy with a broom. The broom breaks. He hits him with the other end of the broom. And then he's holding the broom. And you're like, oh, shit, he's about to stab this guy with a broom. And the guy just falls over to come back and shoot at him later. And he doesn't do it. Like, he's got the... Like, we've already seen him stab a guy in the neck with a broken, you know, chicken bone. And he's got this fucking broken piece of, you know, sharp as shit.
Stabby Woods, my favorite co-star of Van Damme's.
Stabby Woods from the 1950s.
yes, he was an overweight silent area comedian, I believe, Stabby
Woods.
Yeah,
so, but it has little setups like that the whole time, where one of the other things is we meet this really sweet chef, and he does this really cool trick with a knife, and you're like, oh, that's coming up later. No.
This movie tells Chekhov to go fuck himself.
It does. It's like, here, we're going to set up all these things. We're just going to summarily kill these characters because...
Yeah, that is Chekhov's meat cleaver, isn't it?
It is. It absolutely is Chekhov's meat cleaver. Captain, where do you keep the wessels?
So cool. Yeah. You're waiting for that moment where he gets he avenges the death of his wife. His wife's been murdered, and you're like, that guy knows how to work a fucking knife.
Or just the bad guy goes, stick him up, and he has a cleaver in his hands, and he throws it up in the air.
And then chunk.
Like, I got the drop.
Okay, if we can stop playing This Is How I Would Write Sudden Death for just a second. What I found really interesting in a moment that I like to call I Realize Now That I'm Poor is that I sat there going, why the fuck does a sports stadium need a head chef? Because all the food that I'd ever had at sports stadiums were like cheese sticks or pretzels or like...
Oh, have you
and here it comes. Here comes the, have you never been in the executive suites? No, motherfucker. I buy general admission tickets like a poor person does. So I was like, why does this
I wasn't going to say you've never, like, the boxes that they have in most arenas and stadiums... get very different kind of food. I remember back when we did in the Real Deal days, we had a fan locally who rented a box for Nine Inch Nails and gave tickets to all of us Real Deal guys. So we went and saw Nine Inch Nails from a box. And the thing was that you had to prepay a certain amount for the box for food and liquor. And so you could order food from the kitchen and they would bring food to you. And so, like, we got chips and queso and some snack foods and some bottles of liquor.
But they were probably $50 chips and queso.
Yeah. No, it was not cheap, but it was fucking delicious. And we were fucking noshing on chips and queso and drinking shots while watching Nine Inch Nails, which is fucking great.
Do you have to go to the Sorbonne to learn how to make the fucking queso even in those boxes?
They did specifically say in the movie, again, here to the movie's credit, the logic is they had a specific chef there with a crew that was only there for the vice president to bring the vice president food.
No, that's not true at all, because Van Damme fucking knows this guy. Like, they've worked together a number of times. There's no way that chef was only there for the vice president. In fact, that guy had to be lectured by the Secret Service on how it works when the vice president's around. So he is not the one.
No, what I'm saying is he's probably there for VIPs.
Okay, so he's the VIP chef.
Yeah, he's not the chef that's cooking hot dogs for everybody. That's the VIP for the rich people that rent a box, or for in this case, where they are is they're in the owner's box.
Yeah.
So the vice president is there in the owner's box watching the game with the owners. The chefs are probably there to make food for the owners and their family and their friends so that they can eat food and chill out and watch the fucking game.
Okay, I have for you this week something truly delicious. Chili cheese fries I have made with cold potatoes and cheese from a can. Bon appetit.
Now, getting back
for you, to Mr. Melon, for your arena.
Now, for a moment, getting back to our game of how I would write sudden death better. I gotta say, here's a small character moment. I just wanted this one character moment, which is they're sitting in the box, they're being held hostage. But it's game 7 of the Stanley Cup, and I kind of wanted a moment where they go, look, we understand you're holding us hostage, you need this money, but can you let us watch the game? Because it's the fucking game 7 of the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, so...
I kind of would like to see them, like, forget for a moment that they're getting excited, and then they're getting excited looking at the guy who's holding a gun on them. It's like, oh, fuck, I totally forgot we're...
That's my favorite intentional comedy moment of the movie, is when Van Damme is, like, it's like two-thirds of the way through the movie. He's gathering up bombs, and he's trying to get the walkie-talkie to work, and he's standing in the bathroom, and he flips out because it won't work, and he throws it at the mirror, and some old guy goes, hey, relax, they'll win. Like, I just love that, like, calm down, don't get too worked up about this game.
You put the world's biggest sledgehammer dent in a mirror.
Yes.
With a cheap flip phone.
That was a Nokia. That is indestructible.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Do you not remember cell phones of the 90s? You could not break them.
Stadium being blown up.
Yeah. I like
that. Was Nokia Stadium.
No. Oh, interesting. No, I did not catch that. I love that there's a recall button, and it had the word Rome flashing at the top. And I'm like, these are two things I don't recognize about cell phones anymore. Congratulations, sudden death. You are a time capsule. So from the beginning, we now have Darren McCord taking his two... One weird trope of the 90s, I don't know if you guys, like, glommed onto this, but in the 90s, movies hated stepdads. Like,
oh, yeah.
Fucking hate. Like, they're always, like, the most milquetoast, weak, like, this guy barely, this guy is literally playing with Van Damme's kid and singing a song and stops the minute he sees Van Damme, as if it's like, oh, if I speak to his kid, he's going to kick me in the face.
And then just gives him stink eye for the rest of the time. That this child who he's playing with's dad is right there.
And then it's like, it reminded me of movies like Liar Liar, where Cary Elwes is doing his best, and the movie just treats him like such an asshole. And there are like movies like The Fan, where Robert De Niro like literally walks into the stepdad's house and is like, go fuck yourself, shut up, Ted. And it's just like, oh, the 90s hated stepdads.
It also used that hate of stepdads or hated, you know, divorce so much that it gave that to, you know, a lot of these action movie characters to give you something that depth of their character before they shot a lot of people.
Yeah.
And that's another interesting artifact of this movie is they were clearly in the first draft making fun of this. And then when they do it straight face, it's just like, wow, this is Bargain Basement John McClane.
Yeah.
Like John McClane, you know, is the dysfunctional dad. They're separated. You know, he cares about his kids, but you know, it's he and the Holly aren't getting along. And here, this is I've shown up with hats and tickets. You're not supposed
to the hockey game. We'll have a few laughs.
And that's the thing is actually, again, in this moment, his lack of charisma makes that moment really fucking awkward when he shows up because they're like,
I have 2 tickets.
It's like you have him
to paradise.
You have him all day tomorrow. We're literally going out to dinner. You're not allowed to do this. And he's like, but I have tickets. Like, dude, you're the creepy divorced dad that doesn't respect the court order. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you? You're the hero.
To a phone?
No, he doesn't know how to use them.
The tickets?
That's what the movie teaches us later is when a phone doesn't work, he smashes it against a mirror.
He's allergic to phones.
He's allergic to phones. Yeah, no, that part's really weird. So he takes him to the game, of course. This is coinciding with Powers Booth rounding up his team of reprehensibles to go in there, and some of them are security guards, some of them are popcorn delivery men, so like they really have all bases covered here.
And the way we meet Powers Booth here is fucking fantastic.
I love that moment
it
so is, much.
It's a classic hero shot of our villain. He puts a penguin down on the table, turns an egg timer, it pans up, nice suit, Powers fucking Booth. And then he just nods at everybody and turns and walks away. And then there's this moment as all his minions are sitting there and realizing that's a bomb. And they all grab their shit and skedaddle.
Yeah, he threatens to blow up his entire team just to motivate.
Well, no, they were... No, they're clearing... They're clearly blowing up the place where they had all their stuff stashed to cover their tracks.
But
like, that makes sense.
Yeah, slight problem with that shot. That explosion is about the size of a firecracker. Like, it wouldn't actually
burn
anything.
It's like he set off an M80. Oh, no, my favorite toy animal is dead.
You know, we used all the good explosives for the stadium. I really fucked that up.
You
sorry
know,
about that, guys.
Because their good explosives were C4. The most powerful plastic explosive known to man.
Okay, so
the most powerful explosive known to man.
Here's another moment that I'm just baffled by.
I love
this
movie so much, you guys.
I know you do.
All of these things are the reason I love this movie, because it's ridiculous and should not exist, and they tried to make it not exist, but this movie wanted to live so much.
So we get
that it was reborn.
We get to the moment where the daughter is kidnapped.
Which moment where the daughter is kidnapped?
Exactly.
It happens a couple of times.
It does. But the first moment, and Powers Booth is interrogating the daughter, and it's like, who's your dad and what's his name? For one thing, why the fuck does this guy care? Powers Booth has a sixth sense that dad's going to be trouble. There's no explanation why he'd be trouble, but apparently he thinks it's going to be trouble. So he's like, what's his name? It's also McCord. What's his full name? And gets the full name. It's like, look him up. I think he might be trouble. I don't know why you think he's going to be trouble, but then we get the moment. We get the under siege Die Hard moment where it's like, we're finding out who he is. And so they're in the, you know, the U.S. database. They've got info on this guy. What special forces was he? Where is he from? What war did he fight in? How did he learn martial arts and how to disarm bombs? He's a fireman who's now a fire marshal. Like, that's like, you get this whole build up to who is he and why should we be afraid of him? Oh, no, he's just some fire marshal who's worried about his daughter.
As Cargill mentioned, we just screened this at the Alamo Drafthouse, which means I got the live version of Unfiltered Fiancé when Lauren turned to me when he's scaling the building and went, what kind of fireman is he? Which yeah. speaks to that exact point, because yeah, he's running around like he's special ops, yeah. and he's a fucking fireman.
No, this is where you find out, wait, he's not a cook. He's really bum bum bum. Like, that's what this is supposed to be like. Oh yeah, he was ex-special forces, and when he retired, he went to become a fireman, and now he's a fire investigator. Like, you know, a fire marshal. Like, that's something I would believe. There are plenty of guys. I used to have a manager at Chili's who was an ex-Navy SEAL. So this
that
is would something,
have been the twist.
This is something that this is exactly what this movie needed. If you're gonna fucking go there. And it's like, oh, but no, he's just a fire marshal.
At least if he's gonna scale the building like that, tell me he was bitten by a radioactive fireman.
Or yeah. My favorite part of Cargill's story is finding out it's like the opposite, where they're like, we thought he was a fireman, but it turns out he's actually a manager at Chili's.
Yeah.
Like, that's, and that, and by the way, I like how you say fireman, because you say he was a fireman, like he's a villain from Mega Man. Mega Man versus fireman.
He was a fireman.
It's like Spider-Man.
Spider-Man is a lawyer. Fireman is a villain on Mega Man. I think we've established that pretty clearly at this point.
What's wrong with fireman?
His one weakness
is... it supposed to be firemen?
Fireman. Fireman?
Like, he's Jewish?
I don't
like,
know.
That's the gag?
Very fireman.
It's like when you say a word so many times it loses all meaning. That's kind of what's happened in the last 2 minutes.
I have no idea why fireman is all of a sudden fucking with you.
Darren McCord, this firefighter slash possible Chili's manager.
Really good at changing light bulbs.
Great at changing light bulbs, and that is a talent.
Where did he get that light bulb? I don't fucking know. He's like, this light bulb's burnt out. Could you replace it? Yes. Whoa, where was that light bulb?
He's a superhero.
That's
he's
the
fireman.
Power of having radioactive fireman blood.
He's fireman, the superhero.
That's what this
he
is.
He can produce light bulbs and not save innocent people very well. Da 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 da! Incompetent fireman!
I don't need an editor.
Wait, are you talking about the movie or this show? Because
yes.
I think we both kind of do. But yeah, so they're at the game. Powers Booth takes the vice president hostage, which, by the way, I just last week watched a movie called Rapid Fire, which was from the 90s, and it's Brandon Lee. It was directed by Dwight Little, who did Halloween 4.
Yep.
And it's a really cool movie, and it also stars Powers Booth and the actor Raymond J. Barry, who plays the vice president in this movie. So there was like a little reunion there. Yeah.
Speaking of which, a little sidebar, there's a really, really great interview with Dwight Little on our sister podcast.
It's the Movie Crypt.
There it is.
How do you think I found out about Rapid
there?
Fire?
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't. I didn't realize that's how you found out about it.
I had no idea Rapid Fire existed until that interview. And
it's a particularly great interview, actually.
It's a great interview. I really enjoyed that movie. And it actually got me thinking about all the junky movies that I love that take place in Chicago. Like, you got your Home Alones and you got your Blues Brothers, and those are like legitimately great movies, but like the real junky stuff, like Code of Silence and Rapid Fire.
The beginning of Running Scared.
The beginning of Running Scared. Like all of these like real awesome junky movies that all take place in Chicago, I'm a big, big fan of. So yes, we have the vice president in a hostage situation. Darren McCord. By the way, it is, I believe, 37 or 47 minutes into this movie before Van Damme kills or takes on a single henchman. So they really take their time setting all this shit up and really showing us all of the players
and giving us this character development so deep.
Yeah, JCVD with PTSD on the FD.
It did feel a bit like a video game at times. We just have
like
to
Mega
run
Man
from
example.
Area to area, disarming bombs, and then maybe fight a couple dudes,
killing innocent people to put your plan into action. I mean, it's just
before
like a video game
finale.
Yeah, no, absolutely. By the way, great scene in this movie of one of the henchmen playing a mid-90s first-person shooter on his computer. Now, was it
Doom.
It's Doom?
That was Doom.
Okay.
I wasn't sure if it was Doom or Wolfenstein.
No, I thought it was Wolfenstein, but I'm also...
I at first thought it was Doom, and I was like, oh, wait, no, is that Wolfenstein?
I played entirely too much Doom in 1995.
That is entirely possible.
I was like, is it Doom? Is it Wolfenstein? Is it Quake? Is it Duke Nukem? I don't know what the fuck's going on. I don't know these games well enough, but it's definitely one of those where you're just walking around square hallways shooting things as they come up at you. So it's like the early, early days of the first-person shooter. And then we're introduced to the character who...
By the way, that character...
The hacker guy?
The hacker guy who's a complete and utter total knockoff, complete with stealing moments straight out of Die Hard. Yeah, that guy.
I still, you know what? I'm going to.
He was white, just the white version.
Man, I wish you hadn't said that, because what I was starting to say, and now I'm going to sound real awful, is I like him better than the guy in Die Hard. I can do without, oh, the quarterback is toast.
That's a great line.
Fuck that line.
Oh my God, that line's great. And the quarterback is toast.
I mean, I guess it's good that Carl Winslow's in that movie, because apparently so is fucking Urkel.
Oh, the LAPD have themselves a recreational vehicle. He's got so much character, and this guy literally
yes. His character is he vaguely knows sports and is a total fucking nerd. Yeah.
I also love that character is a complete foil in that he's the one guy pretending to that, like, for some reason that he has to pretend that he doesn't know what's really going on. Because the one twist of this movie that's actually really honest to God interesting and that fascinated me was the fact that the guy outside
this is what I was getting to is this character Hallmark, who is a Secret Service agent who we think is our Carl Winslow character.
No, we think, no, he's not the Carl Winslow character. He's the Jones guy's no relation.
Right, but we think he's the Carl Winslow character because he's got the communication directly with Van Damme, and it's like helping him out, and then he goes in to help him out, and we're like, oh, this is the Winslow character, and turns out no.
Yeah, because he's, I kind of see him more as the FBI agents from
the FBI agents are never helpful to McClane, so how is he an FBI agent?
This guy isn't. All this guy does is he's completely inept, and that's what I think is great about it, because he does everything ineptly. He's completely dropped the ball. They have lost the vice president. He does everything wrong that gets guys killed, and then you find out that this is all part of the plan, and he's been running the playbook badly, doing what he's supposed to do, but doing it wrong to allow all this to happen because he's actually in on it, and I'm fascinated by
that. Not just dropping the ball, but dropping Marines from helicopters.
And he is played in so much brilliant 90s glory by
Dorian Hayward.
Harewood. Yeah. Dorian Harewood, who was, I want to say, on St. Elsewhere or some things. He was a...
It's hard to say. That could have all been in your imagination.
He was a late 80s, early 90s actor.
I was making a St. Elsewhere reference.
Yeah, I was right there with you, man.
Thank you. This also led to a moment that I particularly enjoy. The silliness of this movie works so well for me. I don't know what it is. But the moment where he sends in agents after he fucks up and loses a helicopter and a Marine falls onto a car and then other agents get blown up in the parking lot, he decides, no, let's directly send in four agents.
He loses a helicopter that gets shot by a Stinger missile. The Marine falls from the helicopter because of being
hit. He's repelling, yeah.
The Marine who is repelling down from the helicopter falls onto a car, yet we never see any pieces of a helicopter land.
Yeah, no. It evaporated. It's a Stinger missile. It's made of paper.
Incinerated.
It's made of paper. The Stinger missile.
But yet it somehow set some other cars on fire.
Look, the Stinger missile was filled with C4, the most powerful plastic explosive in the world. Which I love that line too. But he's after all of this sends four agents directly in, and they know exactly who they are, and they deliver them back to the Secret Service in a Zamboni that rolls up, driven by a dead guy, but somehow makes a sharp right turn, is my favorite part of this entire fucking moment, is that Zamboni definitely makes a sharp right turn and drives right up to the Secret Service, and then they open it up and outpour all of the agents.
Well, and somehow again, the dead guy opens up the Zamboni.
So this
is true.
But the gloriousness of that entire scene is that the FBI agent under Hallmark has ESP because he's boss, you should see this, and he walks out, and just as they pull up in their car, the Zamboni drives up, because the Zamboni filled with FBI agents they didn't know was filled with FBI agents he knew was going to be interesting.
Yeah, maybe he just likes Zambonis in general. Maybe that's just an interest that
boss,
he has.
They sent us a Zamboni, you should see this.
Hey boss, you gotta check this out, it's got rear wheel steering.
Hey boss, I know Facebook isn't a thing yet, but I saw on your Facebook page of the future that one of your interests is Zamboni, so I think you ought to see this. Which led to the other moment of Unfiltered Fiance, where she leaned over and went, I think the outro to Layla should be playing right now, because it reminded her of the scene in Goodfellas where they're finding all the bodies in the back of the freezers and the dump trucks. And I was like, you know what? That's pretty spot on. I like that crossover movie where Van Damme is the undercover mafioso. Let's fucking make that movie, which I'm sure has already been made. If you go back through his catalog,
I'm sure. 10 years.
By the way,
the plot of Legionnaire. Apparently,
I was just gonna say, how great would it have been if they're like, we've done our research on this fireman. He's not a fireman. He's ex French Legion.
That would have tied this in perfectly to every other fucking
Joking. I'm not going to get roped into this is how we make sudden death.
No, I do. That does remind me of I was telling Derek this on the way home. One of my favorite quotes about a movie of all time in an interview comes from an interview with Jaimon Hunsu, who was in Legionnaire, and he was being interviewed about a bunch of stuff. And they said, oh, you were just in a movie with Jean-Claude Van Damme called Legionnaire. And Jaimon Hunsu just said, yeah, it went direct to video, but not for me, because of me. And I was just like, that's some fucking shade to be throwing in an interview.
That guy knows how to throw that shade for sure. So we get into the other, so as this progresses and Van Damme is disarming all the C4 that he knows how to do because of firemen, this hockey game that's going on is actually a really fucking interesting hockey game because it's game 7 of the Stanley Cup and they go back and forth with goals until the Chicago Blackhawks, who are playing the Pittsburgh Penguins, get one goal up at the end of the third period. And it looks like they're going to win the Stanley Cup. And then with seconds left in the game, and as Van Damme looks on... By the way, if not for the Pittsburgh Penguins, Van Damme would have failed. McLean would have died. The whole building would have blown up. But one member of the Pittsburgh Penguins scores a goal in the closing seconds of the third period, to push it into sudden death overtime, thus extending Van Damme's time to find the bombs and save his children.
But it is really he's responsible for that, because in this movie's worst sequence, in its most painful, god-awful, Jesus fucking Christ, I'm watching this moment, he is trying to escape the bad guys. He's got a ticking clock of bombs to disarm. His child is upstairs, so he decides to dress as a goalie and skate onto the ice and ends up playing goalie for a few minutes and then makes the greatest save of the year in order to save the game, to keep the game going.
Save of the year.
Where's the... Okay, is it under... Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking for the problem with this because I don't see it. I don't see the problem with this. This is an amazing sequence.
The only place he had to hide from the bad guys was on the ice.
First of all, we are complaining about the lack of respect due to Chekhov in this movie. This is one of the only things that's paid off Chekhov style in the first act, is he said, I played goalie minor league in Canada. He knows how to fucking play goalie. I believe he knows how to play goalie more than I know he knows how to disarm C4.
Or
all he needed,
or
was
kill people
stop a
with
shot from the guy missing a tooth.
Yes, that guy. All he had to do is defend against that one shot, and I think that sequence is great. I think there is a great sports movie that is like completely off on the fringes on the sideline of this movie, and I like that this is where they converge. And I also love the moment where he realizes he has to get off the ice so that he can continue to save his children, and realizes the only way to do that is to punch another player in the face, because rarely do you get a goalie who just walks up to another player and sucker punches them. Yes, even in hockey is that a rarity, and I love that moment.
And it doesn't even get him away from the bad guys, because the bad guys recognize him with the goalie mask on.
You know what?
Gets into the fight with them again. It's literally a five-minute sequence of cringe.
A little far-fetched, I will grant you.
I really just wanted him to do the Van Damme splits while blocking the puck.
Oh, shit, that's how you work the splits into this movie. Because that's something we need to talk about all through JCV December.
Because that is a thing that goalies do.
No, we need to talk about this during JCV December, is splits or no splits. This is one of the rare Van Damme movies. No splits.
No splits.
No splits in sudden death. But you're right. If you were going to put split, I hate that you're roping me into this is how we would better write sudden death. Fuck you guys. Not fair. But if we were to do that, I think this is the one good place to add the splits. Is you're absolutely right.
There's one other place that you could put the splits.
Where else?
When you've got the doors, the doors on top of the stadium opening slowly, and he's on there, and what you do is you open it just enough to where he's doing the splits over a fucking stadium 200 feet in the air.
And
that That is something where the audience goes, like, that's a Van Damme moment. Like, it's like, you've seen me do the splits. Have you seen me do the splits 200 feet in the air? And that is the other place you could pull that off.
I like that we're turning him into the tightrope walker who walked across the World Trade Center like, no, I must do it bigger and higher. And
he did it between two trucks.
That was an amazing commercial. I don't care if it was real or not. That commercial is amazing. So this kind of winds down. Van Damme is finding the bombs. He's creating all kinds of mayhem. We find out that our Secret Service guy is in cahoots, and we find this out during the Van Damme MacGyver scene, because as we all know, if you're a fireman, you know all the uses for a fire extinguisher, including the lethal ones, which is that you make a pneumatic dart gun out of a fire extinguisher.
This, again, this goes back to what I was talking about. He does these things throughout this movie that we just need that little primer of, yeah, he was special forces at one time, or something in his background that, like, even the villain in this movie is like, how do you know all this? Oh, you must be part of the, you must be in the department. Oh, as it turns out, yes, he's an agent. He knows how this works. That's how he's done all this. Like, this makes sense. Jean-Claude Van Damme's character has no background whatsoever. He's just a fireman who knows how to kill everybody.
I just had a really bad day.
At one point, that's how he explains himself. It's just like, look, I'm having a really bad day.
See, that's, I mean, what the brilliance of Die Hard is that it's an unlikely hero in a situation who doesn't know how to do what he's doing. He knows how to do a couple things well, but he fucks up a lot. And he's an everyman. We're with him.
Aha. But what is the first thing that McClane does as the everyman to try and get out of the situation? He pulls the fire alarm. He is trying to summon the fireman. I'm just going to put that out there. Just connect the dots, guys. This is not a bad movie.
Summon the holy fireman. come down and save McClane.
He's just drawing the Belgian flag in goat's blood on the floor and trying to summon him. No, it works. It really does. So, yes, our Secret Service agent we thought was a Winslow turns out to be more of an Agent Johnson. Turns out to...
I love how you turned that into a dick joke.
It is a dick. Yeah, he's a real Agent Johnson. That guy is a real Agent Johnson. Yeah, so he gets set on fire with the only other Chekhov payoff in this movie, which is the water gun and the lighter fluid.
And you know what? I love that lighter fluid, apparently, when squirted out with a single squirt from a squirt gun, is like nuclear napalm. Like, it just sets, like, just...
I'm going to stop you. Van Damme goalie. I feel like when Van Damme goalie is in this film, we've kind of thrown a lot of logic out the window.
We've kind of thrown a lot of things out the window with this movie.
And that's why, but see, that's why I love it. Because,
like, I'm just still in shock that at this point we have talked about his kids and you haven't referred to them as the Brussels sprouts.
Oh,
it kills me.
Where's the off button?
It kills me you haven't done that yet.
All right.
You have one job, Brian.
Ladies and gentlemen,
thank
you for gathering here. I would like to officially announce my retirement from podcasting. It's been a great 3.5 years. I want to thank you all for your support. It is clear to me today that I am not of sound mind anymore to continue this task because I fucking missed the Brussels sprouts joke. And I bid you all a good day. Have a nice life. Are you fucking kidding me?
I can't believe that's never dawned on you.
How did I miss that? How did Van Damme not miss that puck and I miss that joke? How the puck did that happen? Anyway, so he is set on fire with a water gun.
The puck, you say.
The puck, you say.
And cheap $2 stores. Miniature super soaker knockoff.
Yeah, which I'm still not exactly sure. Maybe this is a sidebar we don't need to take, but super soakers, how were they designed to be better than most water guns? Because I won't argue they weren't. They were better than most water guns, but I don't...
They have a
separate canister for compressing air. So instead of just pulling the trigger and taking a little air out of the air and pushing it through, you actually store up all this air pressure to get a nice big, like, gusher. Stream like that strength, like I'm going to put a hole through something, like I've just been on vacation with my family for a week and I've just jerked off for the first time, like pressure.
I'm not sorry I asked, but I'm sorry I asked.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. This is my life now. So we get
Brussels sprouts.
Jesus Christ. We get toward the end of this movie, which before we wrap this up, we've got to talk about the fact that real Pittsburgh Penguins announcers are in the booth throughout this movie, and the things that they fucking say, which is kind of the homage that I paid at the beginning of the show, the things that they're just dropping,
they're positively Dan Rather about.
They are Berman-esque. They are Chris Berman-esque.
Always like that.
I hope so too.
Really, really, really hope for all of my friends out there in Pittsburgh who I don't know your names because we haven't met.
The Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh.
Are these imaginary friends, Derek?
All you Yinzers out there, I hope those are your real everyday hockey announcers.
Apparently, one of his actual catchphrases, which he says in this movie, one of my top three of his favorites, is "Scratch my back with a hacksaw." It's like, well, scratch my back with a hacksaw. We're going into sudden death. The one I didn't quite understand, and I would like some clarification. Maybe Derek, you can help me with this. Tell grandma to break out the Vaseline. It's time for the bingo. Yeah, let's try and break this one down.
Is that dirty? Is that dirty?
I feel like it's got to be filthy.
No, it's really, it's not.
Is she just using it for like moisturization purposes?
No. Okay, I hate that I fucking know this.
I'm kind of intrigued that you know this.
All right, so whenever you do anything that's counting money or breaking up lots of paper and such, you use a little Vaseline, put a little Vaseline on your fingers so that you can slip through things. And and lots of old people who play bingo will do tons. They'll get by a stack of cards, and then you've got to quickly put those cards out and then pick those cards up and pull out more cards for the next game because you're buying these stacks. And so you put a little Vaseline on your fingers so you can break these things apart very quickly.
Oh, wow.
Because
we've learned something today.
That's a lot less dirty than I hope.
No, it's a lot less filthy than I was anticipating. And of course, leads me
because what they're saying is break out the Vaseline, we got a bingo game. Like, it's a game on.
Well, it leads me to my only possible response, which is old man Cargill, that old man Cargill. He just knows how to bingo. That's great. I'm glad you filled me in because I was flummoxed. I'll admit, full on flummoxed by that particular one. What was the other one? Was I'll buy that man a beer and one for his dog too. Which apparently the Pittsburgh Penguins know how to party. That's all I'm going to say. It is in fact Pittsburgh.
It's they're Ratherisms. It's like, you know, the time during the election that Dan Rather said, this election is hotter than a parking lot in Laredo.
Like, see, but I get that. Laredo's a hot place. Parking lots are full of cars with rolled up windows. That makes sense. There's a lot of things that are coming out of this guy's mouth in the booth that I'm just like, okay, yes, I'm on board?
A mysterious place. They have.
It is a mysterious foreign place. It is exotic.
They have.
Stullers.
Three rivers. Three. What land, what fantastical land could have three rivers?
Hey, name another major city that's managed to survive so long against a zombie apocalypse.
This is very true.
Seriously. Or Zach and Mary.
This is a magical place where if you are the owner of a professional hockey team, you can produce an action movie starring Van Damme written by your wife. Like, that is the genesis of sudden death, is that the owner at the time of the Pittsburgh Penguins, his wife wrote this story about terrorists taking over a hockey game, and the owner of the Penguins is like, I'm going to produce that into a movie. And here we are. Here we are later doing this screening, hosting it, and talking about sudden death, which remains one of my favorite of the Die Hard knockoffs, and leads to what I think is the greatest climax of all time, which is
really?
Oh, I'm wow. Sorry. If you've been on vacation and you haven't been able to for a while.
For a week.
Yeah, no.
That is the greatest climax of all time.
Second to that is this is leading up, of course, to, you know, everything is starting to fall apart for Powers Booth, and he's trying to escape. But he's been branded by Van Damme's little girl with a stamp, and she recognizes him and does the completely, like, her dad is standing right next to her, but she does this, like, hey, dad, that's the guy. Like the most, like weak effect. It's like, if you would just speak up a little louder, because shit's in chaos right now.
I like that she recognizes the bad guy from the stamp on his hand, not the fact that he stood in front of her face and told her he was going to fill her mouth with spiders.
Oh my God, one of the greatest villain lines of all time is, would you like it if I filled your little mouth with spiders? Holy shit, this guy's not fucking around.
Because you would ever forget the face that said that.
No, right?
Again, another little clever thing, they have Powers Booth disguise himself while he's escaping, even though no one else in this place has seen his face.
Disguised as what I can only assume is one of the SNL super fans. Could he be, speaking of Chicago, could that motherfucker look more Chicago than the blonde wig and giant cop mustache?
But you know what's great about the blonde wig and the giant cop mustache? They then get to put the stuntman in the blonde wig and the giant cop mustache so that Van Damme can knock him around and you don't go, that stunt guy's got a pretty shitty wig.
That's a terrible wig.
So it was actually, I thought it was a really clever little, hey, you know what? Because when you see the stuntman get his ass kicked by Jean-Claude Van Damme, you're not like, oh, look at that. For a moment, I was like, look at the bad wig. Oh, yeah, same bad wig that that Powers Booth was wearing. I'm actually fine with that.
Commitment to continuity is what that is. So
we're talking about this climax, though. Oh, wait. We'll continue. No.
Powers Booth takes the little girl up to the roof where his escape plan, which was this always his escape plan? I'm not sure. But after Van Damme opens the roof of the stadium, the helicopter flies up there and throws down a ladder to Powers Booth, who has abducted, you know, Van Damme's daughter. And they start fighting up there on the catwalk. And as Cargill mentioned, there's a great moment where he just knocks her. It's not the moment where she falls through and she's like hanging on for dear life. It's just a moment where she gets knocked over and he's like, and he starts to run away. And
it's like he's Nelson from The Simpsons.
And
he's just mean.
He's such a dick. He's such a fucking
dick. That's what's so interesting about like Hans Gruber is Hans Gruber's really, I mean, he's a bad dude, but Hans Gruber isn't like psychotic. He's just a thief who's got a really clever idea. And that's what you think this guy is until you realize that the little girl was right. Like that's actually, that is something they have the most interesting relationship in this movie because the daughter actually says something, probably one of the most hurtful things I've ever heard a child say in a movie, where the bad guy is says, I forget what line he says to her, but he says something about, you think that, are you scared? No, I'm not scared of you. There's boys like me at your school. I just think you were born with something wrong with your brain. Like, and it's just like, and the look on his face, it's like, there. It's like she just stuck a dagger in his chest. Like this no. little, this fucking little bitch.
No one burns like daughter of firemen.
Like the Brussels sprout.
Like the Brussels sprout.
That's a spicy Brussels sprout.
You know what? That line did not go down easy, much like a Brussels sprout. And no, I love that moment because they're like, he spends so much time arguing with a four-year-old that you just
wonder. He keeps shutting down the vice president, but he can't handle like this precocious 8-year-old girl.
He murders a woman in cold blood. The husband is mourning, and he's like, "It's a young wine. You might even say it's impetuous." Like just completely callous, and then he just can't let the insults of a 4-year-old go. He's definitely got something wrong.
So
with
when
his brain.
She falls, he laughs. Like that's like they have such a weird relationship, and it's one of the more glorious things going on in this movie. It's just such a weird fucking relationship between that, like these are the real antagonists. Like the only beef that, you know, Van Damme has with him is I am the good guy and you are the bad guy and you stole my daughter but she's okay now. But the little girl and him really fucking hate each other.
Meanwhile, the son is literally just sitting in the stands this whole movie.
Thank God, because he's fucking insufferable.
Yeah.
At least the precocious daughter is likable. She's cute.
Yeah.
You get her affection for her father.
She feels mildly like a child and not a child actor.
Yeah, no, like the most exciting thing is that she gets to meet Icy the Penguin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so she's the one that discovers that Icy the Penguin
is taken over.
Murdered.
Correct me if I'm wrong. We never see this female terrorist outside of the penguin costume, do we?
No.
So we don't meet, we have no reason to suspect that they even have a female on their team until she shows up in the costume, which is kind of interesting. But all of this leading to the death in the movie that isn't sudden. The death in this movie that
the
really,
not so sudden death.
The not so sudden, the elongated death, like drawn out, slow motion death of Powers Booth in this film.
Look, all I'm going to say, Brian, is if you're making a big budget movie and you're going to drop a helicopter into a hockey arena, why would you want it to be quick?
This
would
is a good question.
Would you want it to draw it out?
You know, I feel like my biggest fear in life is death by perpendicular helicopter, because this fucking helicopter gets shot up, the pilot dies, he leans back on the throttle, which apparently, instead, you would think, if you were a rational thinking person, that it would make the helicopter just flip all the way over and crash. No. At a certain point, it stops directly perpendicular to the stadium and slowly, perfectly descends through the small opening of the roof so that it crashes on the ice. And this thing descends so fucking slowly that there's a moment where Powers Booth and Van Damme get to look at each other in the eye, and Van Damme's just like, sorry, bro. And it's just bam. It just keeps going. And we see Powers Booth yelling and screaming so much until it finally hits the ice and explodes. But it really calls into question the title of the movie, because that death takes a while.
Most of them do. Like, all the best deaths in this movie are not sudden. Like, people suffer grievous wounds and don't fucking give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, the woman in the penguin suit gets her hand immersed in boiling oil, and she's still able to punch with it.
Yeah.
Like, we're talking about such debilitating pain that I'm surprised she can even move after that, but she's still punching with that hand. And then she gets the best death in the movie, which is the penguin suit gets caught on the conveyor going into the dishwasher and gets choked to death. And again, this is one of those moments where it's like, well, all right, you've got something even better there. Like, by the way, I know a guy who accidentally got his hand caught in a dishwasher and had that water spray on him, and he was able to pull his arm out after all the skin came off from his elbow down, because that water is so fucking hot it can boil your skin right off. So on the other side, I was like, that was how she, like, that suffering, painful, like, scalding hot water was what I expected. And it's like, oh no, we're just gonna choke a bitch. We're just gonna choke her out.
I think I've learned something tonight. Cargill, I think there might be something wrong with your brain, because your problem with this movie appears to be people aren't dying horribly enough.
If you went to my school, you would be expelled.
We're an hour into the...
Cargill was in my school, he'd get expelled.
Yeah. I may have written a movie in which I kill someone with a lawnmower. I don't quite know.
Yeah, but that movie's called Sinister. Like, I feel like it's a horror movie.
My question is this. We are now an hour into this podcast,
yeah,
and you think that that's my first problem I've had with this movie? Like, I have a lot of problems with this movie. The way people die is just one of them.
Judge, you will notice he's not denying with the charge that I leveled, so we'll just skate right past that.
I plead no contest.
Fair enough. So this is the big question to wrap everything up. So right before the helicopter crash, Van Damme kicks a henchman through the opening, and after a little bit of business, he crashes onto the scoreboard, which explodes, and people start filing out of the arena. Something to note about that, the game, not over when this happens.
No.
They have not settled this game at all.
No.
Which leads me to believe that it's a really good thing this movie was made in 95, because can you imagine if this fucking happened in real life in the era of Twitter? All the fans on Twitter would have things to say about how Pittsburgh orchestrated this huge fake terrorist attack just so that they could win the Stanley Cup.
I can't believe that the guy falls through, lands on the scoreboard, and everyone is like, oh, it's game 7 of the NBA final or the NHL finals, you know, for our team that's never won it in like 50 years or whatever it is. So I'm just going to, like, very quietly and respectfully leave the arena, because it's obviously over once this dude falls on the light.
Yeah, they
We don't need to know who wins this game.
Okay, you know there would be a few fans.
We're not
going to
be angry. We haven't been drinking beer for 3 periods.
Look, okay, sports guys, for a moment, let me ask you a question. Let me pose a little reality to you. So imagine this has really happened. It's the day after this has happened. You guys are listening to Sports AM Radio. And it's whatever your sports guy du jour is. How many callers are going to call in to argue that, hey, by the way, the Bruins won that game because
they weren't actually in that game, which is such an asshole thing to call in and say, is that the Bruins should have won that game between the Blackhawks and the Penguins. I'm not disputing you. Someone will call in and make that fucking claim.
Absolutely.
So they're going to call in and say, well, clearly, like... Because people are going to say we need to reschedule the game. No, I don't think that we need to reschedule the game, because as it turns out, the Blackhawks won, because the only reason why the Blackhawks didn't win initially was because the Penguins had an illegal player who came on to play to replace a sick goalie who made a game-saving catch. And clearly, that was illegal. They cheated, and it's clear that the Blackhawks should be the 1995 Stanley Cup champion.
Didn't anybody feel bad for that goalie? Not only did he get sick in the biggest game of his life, but he got fined $1,000 from Jean-Claude Van Damme.
There's so much collateral damage in this movie because of our hero. People die because of our hero. People get their reputations ruined because of our hero. People, the Blackhawks are denied their actual rightful win because of Van Damme.
I'm pretty sure that goalie is not going to kick up a fuss, because if this movie, if the way this is staged is to be believed, he's in a fucking coma. Like, when he goes into that locker room, he's able to remove all the pads off that coma, off of that goalie who's wearing an oxygen mask without him waking up. That fucking goalie isn't sick. He's in a goddamn coma. And we need to stop talking about who won the Stanley Cup. We need to be getting some help for that fucking goalie. But you know that people are going to call in and, oh, they had a ringer. Oh, that's why they even got to sudden death. This is bullshit.
Look at that guy who went in for one period. He was 3.5 inches shorter. You could tell it from the video.
Let me ask you this. If this was a terrorist attack, how come we didn't find any of those fucking terrorists? That's all I'm going to say. That helicopter, that was staged. Everybody knows that was staged.
We saw one helicopter get blown up. Where's the wreckage?
By the way, the guy in the helicopter, that's the guy who went and did the game-saving catch.
Shit. No. We got to replay. Got to replay the whole series.
And they keeping all the records under Comet Pizza... in Washington, D.C.
Connected to the snake people tunnels.
Oh, man. This is the worst. The internet is just awful, guys. Hey, speaking of awful, Ding Dong Snack Cake, thank you very much. It's time for the junk food pairing. And we are going to go with, I bought this the last time we recorded, and we've just been eating on them ever since. They are little chocolate hockey pucks, otherwise known as Hostess Ding Dongs. And yes,
Ding Dong, yo.
Ding Dong Snack Cake. And be treated to the sonorous sounds of us unwrapping our Ding Dongs right here on the air.
Sounds of
Ding dongs in the mouth. Little chocolate.
That's one of my favorite of art. Them. Fucking eating ding dong, yo.
That joke was in sudden death and lost. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. No?
I came up with Brussels sprouts. Fuck you.
Yeah, that's true. You went. You know what? The people are going to call into the sports show and say, you won the podcast. There will be fans who call in and say, Cargill won that podcast. Derek, thank you so much for joining us.
Sir.
And thank you for coming all the way from Iowa to be with us at the screening and be on the show.
Yeah.
Yay. This has been a great kickoff to JCV December, and I'm really excited about the movies we're going to... I'm
excited about the good movies we're going to talk about.
This movie is good, y'all. This movie is... You know what? I'm going to borrow a fucking line from you to prove this theory.
Let's do it.
This is not a good movie, but it's a great movie. This is a great movie.
I have
movie.
A trademark. You owe me a dollar.
Fine. Here. Eat another fucking ding dong. There's your residual right there.
Ding dongs.
Put another ding dong in your mouth.
Whoa.
What? Oh, I'm sorry. Too far? Too far? Let's kill them all and let God sort them out? Sudden death fan? Look, anyway.
All I'm saying is, after a week on vacation and not eating junk food with your family,
it's
like the first time you put a ding dong in your mouth.
I hate that you're calling back to that as I'm eating something cream-filled. What the fuck is wrong with you?
You know exactly what the fuck is wrong
God
with me.
Damn it. Not enough people.
Sweet and delicious cream.
Yeah, not enough people died on this podcast for Cargill's liking. Speaking of this podcast, you can find back catalog episodes on iTunes as well as on blogtalkradio.com/junkfoodcinema. You can also follow us on Twitter @junkfoodcinema and like us on Facebook, facebook.com/junkfoodcinema. If you really like the show, if you like it way more than Cargill likes sudden death, go to patreon.com/junkfoodcinema. For as little as $1 an episode, you get bonus content. For $5 an episode or above, you get even more bonus content as we've just started releasing the deep dish.
Oh, and something we have not said yet, Thank you, every single one of you listeners who came out tonight.
Yes.
At the beginning, we asked for a show of hands how many of the audience were listeners. All but three of them. Mm-hmm. So you guys fucking rock for coming out. Those of you that came up and said hello, thank you for saying hello. It was so good to meet you. I wish I'd gotten a chance to meet the rest of you. Next time you come, stop by and say fucking hello. We like you people. You are our people. So thank you guys for coming. Thank you for listening if you did come. And thank you for listening if you didn't come.
Yes.
And after a week with your parents.
Stop talking. God damn it. I tried to deke, like triple deke away from that joke, and I knew it was going to happen, and there was nothing I could do about it.
There was no pulling out of that.
Anyway, Cargill, if people want more of that from you, where can they find you on the interwebs?
They can find me at Massaworm, MASSAWYRM, on both Twitter and Instagram.
Derek, where can people find you on the interwebs?
D-Man, DMANN11 on Twitter and pretty much everywhere. Or you can find me...
Find me this week on in my guest room.
You can find me on December 16th at the Iowa State Fairgrounds.
Actually, no, wait.
Iowa comic book icon.
Yeah, no, why don't you... we didn't talk about this. Quickly plug. What are you guys...
I'm a pro wrestling announcer and...
Manager.
And I will be managing the Barbarian Horde at the Comic Book Icon at the Iowa State Fairgrounds on December 16th. And that should be a good old time of wrestling action.
So you've got to tell us about the Barbarian Horde.
It is Red Wing the Barbarian and Mad Dog the Destroyer. And I am their little wizard manager dude.
Nice. So Red Wing is definitely a Detroit fan in hockey terms.
He's a little Native American.
Well, you might still like hockey, right?
Yeah.
Is it the least offensive? No, Blackhawks. Never mind.
Yeah.
Never mind. Shut it down.
You know
Shut
what? We were just doing a whole show about periods, and I'm surprised it's the first time Red Wings came up.
We're not going the Aerosmith route on this one.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming back to my second press conference. I know I announced my retirement earlier, and I appreciate all of you who have held me to that.
I'm sorry this went this direction this week, folks. We'll be better next week.
I have a prepared statement here. Fuck you, Cargill.